This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Well, Northwest Indiana's four casinos did very well in the month of August, as it did a lot of the casinos around the Hoosier State. Let's find out the latest on the revenues and the other action that's happened not only with the Indiana Gaming Commission, but elsewhere in Indiana's gaming industry. And also, just for good measure, we'll talk a little politics, too, talking about the legislative and congressional district maps that are being worked through the General Assembly. Ed Feigenbaum is with us. He's creator and editor of the Indiana Gaming Insight and the Indiana Legislative Insight newsletters for the Hannah News Service. And as always, Ed, thank you for joining us from Indianapolis.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, Chris.
Let's take a look first at the revenue report, which the Gaming Commission put out here recently for the month of August. Looked pretty good.
Yeah, more relatively good news for the state of Indiana. Another month of getting real close to $210 million for the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've now seen six consecutive months of win that's top $200 million. And that's the first time that we've seen that kind of a streak since the second half of 2012. And that was before we had the competition from all these land-based casinos in Ohio. And, you know, you don't see as much advertising for those properties in Northwest Indiana as the folks do in Southeastern Indiana and to a certain extent in Central Indiana. But, you know, those are formidable competitors. And in the case of one of them in Cincinnati, it just happens to be owned by a name familiar to you, and that would be Hard Rock International.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything in particular that you can note from the August revenue figures compared to July?
Yeah, we still are going up, and you know that's certainly a positive feature. And we continue to see the growth be, I guess, what you'd call organic rather than a consequence of, for example, an extra Saturday in the month, and you know, an oddity of the calendar. You know, where a holiday may have fallen or something. It seems to be that the revenue is growing as opposed to, you know, being cannibalized from other properties, and that's certainly a positive thing. And a lot of this continues to come, even though the Rivers Casino in Des Plaines also continues to grow its revenues. So, you know, that's certainly a positive for Northwest Indiana, that the casinos there continue to see growth, even though their competition is also seeing growth.
Mm-hmm. Is it a case where, once again, we have to keep a close eye on what happens across the state line? And we know that, at least for now, there are no new casinos, I guess, planned for Chicago, although I guess it's another bone of contention for the folks that are running the Indiana casinos, waiting to find out whatever happens over in Illinois. But is this another opportunity we just have to keep a very close eye on?
Absolutely. And you saw some of the sports wagering revenues decline a little bit when things opened up in Illinois. And when you saw Illinois change the regulations, thanks to Governor Pritzker, to allow for a little bit earlier a shot at the online and mobile gaming. And the same thing's going to happen to Northwest Indiana once there's a casino in somewhere in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And also with respect to, you know, what you're going to see in terms of South Suburban Chicago with the addition of a property there. And right now, you know, you're seeing Hard Rock International in particular at their Gary property really ramp up their efforts in order to position themselves as the casino of choice so that people, you know, may go and kick the tires of a new property in the south suburbs or, you know, downtown or wherever a casino may land in Chicago, but that they will come back to the property that they've valued over the years. And that's why, to a large extent, you've seen Horseshoe Casino Hammond maintain its position as the top casino in terms of revenue in Northwest Indiana, because they've managed to capitalize on their visitor base and maintaining that particular group of patrons. And that Caesars rewards program has proven to be very valuable in maintaining that customer base.
And it certainly sounds like, as always, that loyalty really, really counts, especially in the gaming industry. Like you mentioned, you know, they may have some new casinos open up here, but people know they'll stick with the ones that they like the best and the most loyal to. And that's right now it's Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, and I'm sure that over time, probably Hard Rock and Gary will be about the same too, won't it?
Well, it certainly will improve as people start to get a little bit more invested in the player programs.
Yeah.
And just to the extent that Hard Rock may also expand in Illinois, and they've got the property in Cincinnati as well. And then you're also going to see Hard Rock be a competitor in Terre Haute.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you've got Hard Rock, you know, in all of those states, and having a multiple presence in some of them, you know, obviously patrons are going to have more of a choice. They're going to be able to play their games, visit their local casinos a little bit easier than they might have otherwise, where they might have had a longer kind of trip to gamble. And that will pay off for the casinos that have a proliferation of local properties. They're also able to consolidate their marketing efforts. They're able to target marketing toward a particular property. So, for example, if Casino A that's owned by Company A finds that it's reaching capacity on Saturday nights, then maybe that Company A will target mailings and promotions to patrons that might be persuaded to go to Casino B of Company A instead.
Yeah.
So they're able to manage that kind of flow and able to, you know, better schedule employees. And they're also able to offer more different kinds of promotions and target things specifically to people who like certain types of opportunities. You know, what you've got at Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana with the opening of the entertainment venue there soon will be a different kind of experience than they can offer a patron, for example, if they were to build a casino in Terre Haute, which may not have that entertainment facility. But it may be that, you know, there are some patrons in East Central Indiana or Central Indiana that prefer more of a hometown kind of flavor to their casino, don't want something quite as bright and glitzy as what you might have available to them in Gary, and they might prefer that kind of a thing. So they're able to target and better market to customers if they've got multiple properties. And we just very well may see Hard Rock land in Terre Haute as well. And, you know, that was certainly a prospect that we saw, you know, up until a couple of months ago where they had partnered with Spectacle Entertainment LLC for a potential Gary casino. But when that Spectacle license was non-renewed for Gary, the license was reopened. And Hard Rock turned out to be last week one of the four applicants for that license when things closed on the end of the day on September 22nd.
Does it look like Hard Rock is very serious to be a possible owner of that casino opening up in Terre Haute?
I'm not sure that there's a favorite right now. There are three, I think, very competitive proposals from very well-known entities. And then there's a fourth kind of dark horse that I think believes that it's kind of right-sized for the community. But the four potential operators would be Hard Rock, and you've got Churchill Downs, Inc., the folks that own the big racetrack in Louisville, Kentucky. And I think a lot of people still perceive of Churchill as being, you know, a horse racetrack, period, which is what they were until a couple of decades ago, and then they started expanding, and now they are a major national casino company that happens to have, you know, the most identifiable racetrack in the world. And they also, you know, operate, they are the owners, even though a lot of people really don't know this, of Rivers Casino in Des Plaines. So they are in more places than you might think, and they have proposed a real fancy project in Terre Haute. They are known to Indiana. They used to be the owners of what's now Hoosier Park Racing Casino when it was just a horse race track back in the mid-90s and 2000s. So they've operated in Indiana as well. You also have a company called Full House Resorts, Inc., that's interested in that Terre Haute license. Full House Resorts operates the Rising Star Casino Resort in Ohio County. That's just across the Ohio River from Kentucky, and is really in the Cincinnati market. They're a smaller company, but they also have the leading proposal right now for the casino in Waukegan. And Full House was the initial company to approach Terre Haute about trying to get a casino license a few years ago. They were the ones that ignited all the discussion, and then it became a local project as Full House looked elsewhere. And now Full House is back, and they've come in with a $250 million project proposed for that. And, wow. You know, if you recall the last numbers that we were hearing, and those had been boosted up from the initial numbers, were about $150 million in terms of investment for Terre Haute. When you look at the Gary property and realize that, you know, Hard Rock invested about $300 million in Gary, that's a lot of money that you're talking about with a $250 million project in Terre Haute. And this is a company that is well known to the leaders of the city of Terre Haute. The final applicant is a company called Premier Gaming, which is kind of more of a manager than a developer of major properties. They really don't have any big properties around the country. They've got a couple of smaller ones. They have not done a lot of work in the Midwest, but their leader is a guy who for a number of years was an official with Majestic Star Casino. So he certainly knows the Indiana market, the Northwest Indiana market, perhaps more than Central Indiana, but he's not new to Indiana, and he's not new to the Indiana regulatory system. And they've also proposed a casino for Terre Haute. So you've got four applicants there, and it will be a very interesting process to see work out.
Okay. Well, before we take a look here at some of the issues around the problems with the General Assembly and redistricting maps, let's get caught up if there is anything new to mention about this investigation by the federal government into the Indiana gaming industry. What's the latest on that?
Well, there was some information that leaked out last week. There is a filing by former Senator Brent Waltz's lawyers in that case that got filed in public as opposed to under seal, which it was supposed to have been, and the Indianapolis Star managed to get a peek at it before the file was ultimately sealed, and that confirmed a lot of things that I've written about over the last couple of years, and some of the interesting points there would be that this seems to be largely directed by the public integrity section of the U.S. Department of Justice from D.C., and that means that there's a lot more at stake here than what we've seen or what we might think of locally. And a lot of people are still trying to connect the dots as to what that might mean. We're also seeing some significant involvement from the FBI field office in Terre Haute. And nobody's quite sure what that means, but it also does confirm that the investigation was set back a little bit a few months back when one of the members of that team, a Terre Haute Police Department detective assigned to the FBI public corruption team in Terre Haute, was murdered one day right outside the FBI office, and nobody can quite figure out the motives for that.
Yeah, I recall that.
So there are a few things going on here, and you know, there's additional confirmation that, you know, Rod Ratcliffe, the kind of the father of Indiana gaming to a certain extent, is more tied up in this than, you know, he'd like you to believe based on some of the grand jury testimony that was released in the material that was filed without being under seal. And we're just waiting and watching here. There seems to be a dispute between the defendants, John Keeler, the former Spectacle Entertainment LLC vice president and general counsel, and Brent Waltz, the former Indiana State Senator who had money funneled to his campaign allegedly by the Centaur people. about whether they ought to go on trial together, about whether the trial ought to be this fall. You know, Keeler would like to see a delay. I think Walls is ready to go to trial right now. And so there's a lot of the typical legal jockeying and maneuvering that you see before a major criminal trial like this.
Ed Feigenbaum is the creator and editor of the Indiana Gaming Insight and the Indiana Legislative Insight newsletters put out by the Hanna News Service.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
You're welcome. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Indiana University Northwest Center for Urban and Regional Excellence is offering, as it does every year, a variety of non-credit courses and some educational programs that people enjoy, in fact, people of all ages, because they pick up skills, they enrich their lives, and they also get ready for the future. As well, to talk about the programs offered up in this fall series of courses, we have with us, first off, Ellen Zarletta, who is the director of the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence at IU Northwest, and Amanda Smith, the assistant director of the program. And ladies, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio today.
Oh, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Well, Ellen, if you will, first tell us a little bit about the center for people that are not familiar with and how it all blends in together with the overall goal, and these new fall courses are going to be part of it.
Center for Urban and Regional Excellence has been on the IU Northwest campus since 2004, and our purpose is to create positive and impactful programs and initiatives, and we do this by working with our community partners. And the ultimate goal, as you said, Chris, is to make sure that we are promoting continued learning and that we're addressing the issues in the region. And one very important part of our programming is our senior university and adult education programming, and Amanda Smith is our coordinator for that programming initiative that we have on our campus and that serves our community. So Amanda can tell you a little bit more about what we have currently and how we are engaging with the community in that area.
Before you do, Amanda, will you fill us in on how these courses come about and how you get them set up and how you get to work with other members on campus to get these out so people can take advantage of them?
Yes, I would be glad to talk about that. So with our senior university program, we have a long history with senior university on campus going back several decades. In more recent years, you know, we've really just developed programming based on what our community has been asking for, so getting their feedback and then telling us what they want to learn about, so and building on those skills. And so the last few years, a lot of our programming has become much more computer and technology focused based on the needs that our seniors have been expressing. And at the same time, we are also wanting to make sure that we are continuing to serve people in terms of personal enrichment with regard to the arts. And so, for example, we have a two-part series coming up next week. Mm-hmm. That's the trumpet and jazz, which is led by jazz pianist Billy Foster, who is actually also, you know, adjunct professor here at IU Northwest. So that's a great example of how we have our faculty who are also involved in our programming. And if folks are interested in that series, it starts on Monday, 27th, and also runs on Thursday, the 30th. And we definitely have more seats available since it's going to be run via Zoom. So we have lots of space there, so we hope folks join us. Other examples of sessions that we are running, more based on those needs that have been expressed with regard to technology, are things like sessions on smartphones. So we have Smartphones 2 for Androids and Smartphones 2 for iPhones coming up. For those who want to learn more about how to use their phones beyond just making calls and sending text messages. And also running an in-person on-campus series, Introduction to Email and Internet, in October for those who really want to get some hands-on learning.
Now, Ellen, I understand that some of the early programs, which continue on even to this year, are giving people hands-on experience, and a lot of it, I know, is at many requests to come in, dealing with gardening, and in particular, the IU Northwest Community Garden Series. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so our community garden was started about 11 years ago. It actually came out of a student project in an environmental science class in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs. And so over the last 11 years, we have evolved to its current state, which includes really active programming and engagement with the community. So there is a community engaged board for our community garden, and they provide us with advice and counsel on how to expand the scope of activities for the community garden. And included among those activities are the classes that we are offering. And so those classes moved, many of them moved to virtual, of course, because of the pandemic. But we have a tremendous following there and in our gardening classes. And Amanda can probably fill us in. Amanda, can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening more recently about with respect to the gardening classes?
Yes, I would be glad to. So as you mentioned, our sessions are running via Zoom right now, and we have next week coming up on the 23rd a session called There's a Fungus Among Us, which is about fungi and mushrooms. And then we also have two more sessions coming up in October to round out our season. One of those is the benefits of biodiversity. So those who want to learn more about how to, you know, introduce new species and not just plants but also insects, those beneficial pollinators into their garden and how that benefits, you know, not just their plants and those insects but humans as well. And that's coming up on October 7th. And we also have another session on October 19th, the history and symbolism of roses. And so that's going to look, like I said, more at the history and symbolism itself, but there will be a small section on that about actually how to grow roses. And so those are some examples of what we've been offering.
I understand that, as always, it has been that the programs have been set up not only to help give people some instruction about some interesting topics, but also to help adults be able to plan for the future. And in a lot of cases, these are adult education courses, or they're tied together with the university college idea. Will you tell us about what's coming up on the fall series of courses that will help people get available education, training, if necessary, for the future?
But, you know, Chris, it's such an important point that you make. Our, you know, our central to our mission is to be able to provide these opportunities for continued learning for the members of our community. And we do have a wide variety, as you pointed out, of activities. Senior University is one serving those seniors who want to engage in continued learning, improve their lives, whether it's life enrichment or actually acquiring skills that are so essential for the pandemic. The community garden, which addresses the issues of food security, providing people with knowledge and awareness of the ways that they can become more active in promoting their own health by community gardening. And then finally, as you just said, adult education. So our adult education offerings are online, and these offerings are actually in a diverse number of areas, including life enrichment, but also career preparation. And so Amanda is also our coordinator for those activities. So I'm going to ask her just to jump in here and talk about the different categories that we have of these offerings so that our community members can not only enrich their lives personally, but also think about where they want to go with respect to their careers in the future. So, Amanda, could you share a little bit more?
Yes, I would be glad to. So, actually, in October, we're running an adult education senior university crossover series called Business Building Basics, which is open to adults of all age, and it's going to be held live over Zoom. So that's a great opportunity for both, you know, seniors and people, you know, who are in, you know, younger generations to really look at, you know, how they might want to become entrepreneurs and how to pursue maybe a dream that they've had for quite a while. And through adult education, we also, as Ellen mentioned, offer a number of other personal and professional development opportunities. Some are self-paced, some are instructor-led. Right now, the focus is online learning, you know, given the pandemic. Some of the categories that we have for those courses include fundamental courses. Those are six-week courses that have monthly start dates. You can choose from an instructor-moderated session, or you can choose a self-paced tutorial. These are really great ones for learning a skill set, like you can take, for example, speech Spanish or maybe accounting fundamentals. There's also a lot of different introduction, intermediate, and advanced computer skills courses like Excel, Word. You can learn the whole Microsoft suite through that. And then we also have more in-depth career training programs. Those are really designed to provide skills necessary to acquire professional-level positions in a lot of in-demand occupations. Similar to that, we have a comprehensive career tracks. The specialty of our comprehensive career tracks offerings include healthcare related programs. We actually have 9 instructor led healthcare programs that are going to be beginning in mid-October. That includes anything from clinical medical assistant and pharmacy technician training to veterinary assistant. And so we really try to make sure that our offerings are diverse and varied, and that can help people improve their lives in a variety of different areas.
Well, ladies, we've heard a lot about the courses that are offered in the fall semester, fall time, I guess we would say, for classes that citizens can take advantage of. If anyone is interested in the courses coming up, they'd like to sign up for them, how do they get to do so?
The best way to learn more about our program would be to visit our website at iun.edu/CURE, or they can call us at 219-980-6978, and we'll be glad to give more information.
Ellen, are you pleased to hear that all of these programs not only are popular enough that they carry on almost from year to year, but these new ideas keep coming up?
Yeah, we have actually experienced a lot of growth in the last 4 or 5 years as people get to know about the programs. As I said, many of them have been around for at least a decade, but what we are offering is the opportunity not only to prepare yourself to develop the skills, but also to explore. The opportunities for work now are increasingly diverse, and people want to be able to find out just a little bit more about what a field is like before they make some of those decisions, and these programs give our citizens the opportunity to do that. And so we're very encouraged by not only the opportunity to provide these courses to our citizens, but also the citizens' support of the programs, because they are advising us, they're providing us with ideas for where we need to move in the future, and we really value their input on and in the growth of the program. So, yes, we do.
Thank you very much, Alan and Amanda, for talking about these programs that are also available right now to sign up. Check out the programs that are available during the fall classes for Indiana University Northwest's Center for Urban and Regional Excellence. And ladies, thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, thank you.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Meals on Wheels here in Northwest Indiana is once again asking for your help as a citizen to help bring food to a lot of people that need it the most. And with us to talk about it, we have the volunteer director for Meals on Wheels of Northwest Indiana, Charlie Masovi, back with us. Charlie, thanks for coming back on Regionally Speaking.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. It's always great speaking with
you. Well, this is a busy time for everybody, and especially for you folks with Meals on Wheels. Fill us in on some of the latest and the latest efforts you would like to get more volunteers to join in the effort.
Well, Chris, we have an ever-growing need for meal assistance in Northwest Indiana, and of course with that need comes the need for a new volunteer base. We are currently looking for drivers, volunteer meal delivery drivers in Merrillville and the Miller area, as well as all of our routes that are expanding. As we grow the routes, we need to grow the volunteers that deliver those meals on the routes. Something new this season, we are asking people to turn over a new leaf and rediscover their purpose, mm-hmm. And hopefully volunteer with Meals on Wheels.
Are you finding that people who have been good volunteers are staying around, or are you looking for just more volunteers in particular because there are so many more people, so many more clients out there that you're trying to serve?
Exactly. We have some wonderful commitment from our volunteer drivers. Some have been with us 5, 10, 15, 30 years that Meals on Wheels has been in business providing meals. So it's not necessarily that we lose drivers. It's more of the expansion of the need. So it is a perfect opportunity for recent retirees looking to rediscover their purpose in life and join us as a meal volunteer delivery driver. And we are also introducing our new mobile meals app. Mm-hmm. You can use it on your smartphone. It initiates the navigation process on your smartphone. and we'll get you from your current delivery to the next delivery with just a point of the button, so you have the route sheet literally in the palm of your hand. It is saving so much time. Everyone who has gone through the training on the app loves it. They keep asking, when can we get trained? How can we add ourselves to this process? It makes the commitment so much easier. And we have some volunteer meal delivery drivers training coming up along with the app. We have one this Wednesday, the 29th of September at 9 a.m., followed by October 5 at 9 a.m., and October 14 at 1:30 p.m. Of course, anytime anyone is interested in volunteering with us, they can call 219-756-3663 and ask for Charlie, the volunteer manager. And we can also accommodate their schedule in regards to the trainings. We have been doing some one-on-one trainings to make it more convenient for their schedule.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. Now, all the time when we get together to talk, we bring out the point that you're not only as a volunteer driver for Meals on Wheels in Northwest Indiana, just delivering meals, and you know you get specific training about that, but you also help out in another way that people don't always think about. That the fact that you're out there on the street as a volunteer, you're visiting with the clients for Meals on Wheels, but you're also making a rather personal connection and doing a wellness check with every single stop you make. Will you talk a little about that, please?
Oh, most definitely. The drivers make a great connection for a wellness check or a well-being check. So we have two emergency contacts on file so that if there's any issues, we can call the emergency contact and get the ball rolling and the wheels spinning to accommodate any kind of health issue or emergency that may arise. And by delivering, once, twice a month, you actually form a relationship with that client. They check in with them and ask, you know, how their family's doing. How are the grandkids? Oh, look, you got a haircut. How you feeling today? Mm-hmm. So they really establish a great relationship with the clients, and most of our volunteer meal delivery drivers say that's one of the perks that they like about Meals on Wheels and what sets us apart from other meal delivery services.
Do you find, too, that when the Meals on Wheels volunteer drivers are out there delivering meals, they talk with the people that they drop off the meals, but if there's something wrong, they kind of make a mental note of that and then get back with you folks at the office to, in turn, pass the word on if it's needed to even call the doctor or an ambulance in some serious cases?
Yes, we have had those instances arise where the meal delivery volunteer will call the office immediately if they suspect something is not right. We, again, reach out right away to those emergency contacts and take the next step according to their instructions. And what is also great about the new app we've released is we can see that now in real time. So we get an alert as soon as they click the button on the app that there is a emergency issue or a well-being check that needs to be made, so that we even save time that way. So the app is really remarkable. It is free, of course, to download and use, and it has made a big difference in the meal delivery time, the emergency contact, the well-being check. It's amazing how technology actually improves health.
That's true. How long has this app been in development, and when did you all at Meals on Wheels of Northwest Indiana get to put it out there and make it available for the drivers?
Well, we tested it for a year with our van delivery drivers. Those are the people from Meals on Wheels who drop off the food containers at the designated drop-off site, and then the volunteers pick them up from that drop-off site. So the van drivers have been using it for a year. We've been working out any kinks that it had, but now it is available for each volunteer meal delivery driver on their route. And again, I can't say how remarkable it is in providing the nutrition saving time for the volunteer and working on those emergency contacts so efficiently.
Charlie, if you will, you mentioned this at the outset of our conversation, but will you bring it back up again? Since you're making meal deliveries in Lake and Porter County, which communities are in the most urgent need of having volunteer drivers right now?
Again, the most urgent need is the Merrillville area. We have about 7 different routes that we run through the Merrillville contact right here at our facility.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick up the food containers here and go out delivering to each home and client. We also have a great need in the Hammond, in Miller, Crown Point, Munster, Griffith. All of our routes are expanding. We have more people that need the meal assistance. And again, any time that any volunteer can offer, we will take them up on that and get them scheduled and out there right away.
Well, Charlie, if you will, once again, give us the way that folks can reach you there at Meals on Wheels here in Northwest Indiana if they're interested in going through the training and becoming a volunteer delivery person.
We can be reached at 219-756-3663 or Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, at mownwi.org.
Charlie Misovi is the volunteer manager for Meals on Wheels here in Northwest Indiana. They're looking for more volunteers to be able to deliver the nearly 1,700 or more nutritious meals every day and to do a little wellness check and check on people as well, too, in Northwest Indiana. Charlie, thank you for joining us and giving us the latest information. Let's hope that the new volunteer campaign called Turn Over a New Leaf is a big success.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to hearing from the public very soon.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Our thanks to Ed Feigenbaum with Indiana Gaming Insight Newsletter. Also to the folks from the IU Northwest Center for Urban and Regional Excellence, Ellen Zarletta and Amanda Smith, and to Charlie Misovi from Meals on Wheels of Northwest Indiana. I'm Chris Nolte. We'll be back with you tomorrow.